Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Traitor Queen by Adele Jordan, narrated by Esther Wayne. Chapter 1. Chartley, Staffordshire, 1586. Nothing to be afraid of, eh? Kit Scarlet huffed and lowered herself into the water. It was shallow in these parts, barely deep enough to be called a babbling brook. Her clothes were soon soaked, the heavy hose and jerkin weighing her down. Taking off her cap and ruffling her short auburn locks, Kit took a deep breath before plunging under the water. The view of the green riverbank disappeared, along with the reeds and the overhanging oak trees. The sweltering heat of the summer's day vanished too as the cool water lapped over her. Holding on to the bedrock of the river, Kit pulled herself along the brook, keeping her body close to the shingle. She glanced up at the glistening surface, wary of just how far she had to travel before she could take a breath. The water was an old fear, one she had faced many times now. Though this was still no easy task, her fingers pulled so much at the shingle that she stirred up the sediment, making her view through the water cloudy. Once she reached a point in the river where the reeds grew thicker, Kit pushed her head above the water and took a grateful breath. Here she was hidden from the riverbank, but only just. It gave her the perfect view of a large barn on the bank. Francis Walsingham, spymaster to Queen Elizabeth, had set Kit this commission with one goal in mind: to catch Mary, Queen of Scots, committing treason. She will have to take the bait first, Kit murmured now as she peered out from the reeds. The barn, home to the local brewery, was so isolated that anyone approaching it by road would easily be seen, but not from the river. There were too many reeds for any boat to pass, so no man who walked this land would suspect they'd have a visitor come this way. Kit was safe from discovery. For now. She kept low in the water, feeling the reeds slide against her skin as fish darted past her legs. "Where are you?" Kit whispered, staring at the barn. Chartley Brewery was tasked with supplying Chartley Castle with its beer. Kit had already spoken to the brewer. He strode out of the barn now, scuffing stones beneath his heavy leather boots. He was no great actor, and uncertain what to do with his arms, he repeatedly folded them, then let them hang loose at his sides. Kit sighed deeply, fearing that the brewer could be the one loose link in their chain. She didn't have to wait long until the visitor arrived. Cloaked in deep red silk, the rider was clearly no ordinary messenger. His coiffed hat was pulled low over his brow and fixed to his temple with a golden cord. When he saw the brewer, he stiffened in his saddle, reining his grey horse to a sharp stop.
"You have the message?" the brewer asked with no words of greeting.
The rider looked down at the plump brewer with clear disdain.
"How can I be certain this will reach her?"
The man did not deign to step down from his horse. He kept a good distance between himself and the brewer, apparently fearing what would happen if he came too close. Kit could smell the scent of hops competing with the river water. The rider clearly smelt the same thing as he pressed a herb-soaked linen to his nose and lifted his chin an inch higher.
"Any letter that has come through me has been sent by her,"
the brewer said sharply, shifting his arms restlessly once again.
"You don't want your message delivered? Then fine. I'll take the beer without it."
He turned to walk away, back toward the barn. Angered that he was giving up so easily, Kit veered forward in the reeds. It was her task to keep an eye on the brewer, Mackintosh, and make sure he kept to the plan. At her movement, a fish moved beneath her foot, and startled, she splashed in the water. The rider looked sharply in her direction, and Kit ducked down, masking her body with the reeds. She didn't dare move or look again, in case it gave away her location.
"Are you alone here?" the rider called to the brewer.
Judging by the sound of wheels on the track road, Kit guessed he was readying his cart with the barrels of beer.
"I have my workers," the brewer answered in a calm tone. "And the river."
The rider's voice grew nearer as he edged his horse toward the reeds. Kit sank further into the water until her chin was just above the surface. Reaching down, she took hold of one of the two daggers she carried on her belt. Her fingers tightening around the carved hilt, she waited to see if the rider would find her.
"We have some big fish," the brewer said with a chuckle. "I don't have long. Do you want your message sent to her or not?"
"I do."
The rider's voice retreated. Kit raised her head enough to peer through the reeds. The brewer had stopped by the cart and was holding out the palm of his hand, which was worn from years of work. The rider wrinkled his nose as he stared down at it. Reaching into his doublet, he pulled out a letter, which he placed in Mackintosh's hand with some hesitation.
"How will you get it to her? Same as I send them all."
Mackintosh turned to the nearest barrel on the cart and reached up. With thick arms, he laid the heavy barrel on its side and stopped it from rolling away with a stone. Taking the wooden cork out of the barrel, he raised it high to reveal that it was hollowed out. The letter was rolled up in a hurry and stuffed into the cork. The cork was then sealed with a lid and returned to the barrel. Kit shook her head with a smile. The first time she had caught the brewer doing such a thing, he'd quivered in his boots to find her standing behind him, a dagger in her hand. Now he was working with her and Walsingham's other intelligences. Of course, had Walsingham not threatened to take the brewery away from Mackintosh, he might have refused to help them. He was a man who thought of the money in his coffers, and little more. Mackintosh returned the barrel to its upright position and slid it to stand alongside the others on the cart.
"How do you know?"
the rider asked with a quick flick of his hands at the other barrels.
"How do you know which one it is?"
The brewer grunted and took out a small blade from his belt. He carved a small cross on the side of the barrel.
"Only me ever sees it."
Kit smiled, knowing it was not the truth. Gilbert Gifford, a double agent who had once been loyal to Mary, Queen of Scots, and now worked for Walsingham, had been the first to notice such notches. It hadn't taken many questions to work out what the beer barrels were really being used for.
"She'll get your letter,"
Mackintosh said, and walked around the cart, heading toward the horses.
"And her reply?" "It could come tomorrow. It could come in a month."
Mackintosh smiled as he took his place in the driver's seat of the cart.
"From what I've seen, she is in no hurry to answer her letters. You got a name? Somewhere I can find you to let you know when she replies?"
"No," the rider answered sharply.
"I will come back myself for her answer."
Neglecting to thank the brewer for his part in what could be a treasonous affair, the rider turned his horse and took off at a fast gallop away from the brewery. Kit pushed back the reeds completely, revealing her face. The brewer looked toward her with an uneasy expression.
"I pray you were right about this," he called to her. "I don't want trouble."
"You found trouble, Mackintosh, when you let their coins grace your palm. Now go, deliver your letter." She waved a hand at him to continue on. He grumbled something she couldn't hear and then flicked the reins, the cart setting off along the track. Despite the cold water making her shiver, Kit didn't hesitate to return the way she had come. Diving once more under the river's surface, she pulled herself along the riverbed, just as she had done before, to prevent any passers-by spotting her. When she reached the place where she had entered the river, she broke through the surface. A horse nearby whinnied in recognition. Pushing her wet red locks back across her head, she clambered out of the river and ran toward the horse.
"No time to waste, boy," she urged the horse. "We'll have to be fast if we're going to catch up with him."
Pulling herself up into the saddle, Kit flicked the reins and took off. They galloped onto a track that was parallel to the one the rider would have taken away from the brewery. As she reached the main track, Kit halted, turning her head back and forth in the hope of seeing the rider. She caught a glimpse of dark red silk disappearing around an oak tree and urged the horse after him. Slowing to a trot, Kit prayed the horse would make as little noise as possible, so she would not be discovered. But the man in front didn't once look back. For now, she was safe. They rode as far as Uttoxeter. When they passed into town, Kit wound a confusing path through the streets, passing other individual riders and carts, so she never once looked like she was following the grandly dressed rider. Passing an inn in one of the first streets of the town, Kit hesitated for just a moment. She had stayed at that inn during the recent winter with her old spy partner, Eva Blackwood, and his family, whilst on a mission to deliver a letter from Queen Elizabeth of England to Mary, Queen of Scots. That meeting had not ended the way she had hoped. Mary Stuart had cast her out of the room, with no wish to accept the offer of renewed friendship from her cousin. For her trouble, Kit had been taken by one of Mary Stuart's most loyal supporters, Lord Ruskin, and tossed from a cliff in misplaced revenge for the death of his wife. Had it not been for Eva, she might have died that day. Shivering at the memory, Kit returned her focus to following the rider through the town. Suddenly, he picked up speed. A small group of children who had been playing in the street all jumped back, startled. A man yelled at the rider, saying he should not ride so fast through the town, for it was dangerous. Kit increased her pace and followed him. It was clear that the rider had realised she was there, for now he glanced back at her, repeatedly. He was so busy looking over his shoulder that he almost knocked a lady down in the street. She barely managed to jump out of his path in time. Darting over a bridge, he pushed a small man out of the way. The man staggered against the side of the bridge, dangerously close to falling in. Kit rode on after him, with just as many people shouting at her as the rider in front.
"What do you think you're doing, lad?"
the man on the bridge barked after her. The rider of the grey horse was stretching ahead now. The road had been busy and the buildings densely packed, but suddenly the obstacles began to thin out. They passed a decrepit church, the old stone building almost collapsing. The rider rode through the graveyard, narrowly missing a mourner dressed in black who had come to pay their respects. Kit followed, but at a safer distance.
"My apologies,"
Kit shouted as she passed, giving them a wide berth. The town's streets fell away, and they met an area of woodland. Where there had been cobbled roads before, there were now dirt tracks that had been scored by years of use from carriages, carts, and horses.
"Stop!"
Kit called out to the rider up ahead. Her horse would tire soon, and she needed to find out who he was, or at least who he was reporting to. The rider glanced back, but he didn't slow down. His horse galloped away and then took a sharp turn up a steep bank. Kit couldn't turn in time, and came to an ungainly halt on the track, peering up at where the rider had gone. He'd clearly known about this lesser trodden path in advance, for it was well hidden. With the rider no longer in sight, Kit hastened to follow, urging her steed up the bank. It was a steep climb, and Kit's horse grunted at the effort, but they eventually came out onto a flat road. Hearing the sound of galloping hooves and harnesses being flicked, Kit turned in the saddle to see a carriage led by four horses charging toward her.
"God's wounds!"
she cried, pulling her horse to the side of the track and barely escaping their path. The carriage flew past. A glimpse through the window revealed that her quarry was now inside, and there was another with him. Glancing back along the track at the rider's abandoned horse, Kit spurred her own horse into a gallop. She tried to keep up with the carriage, but the four horses pulling it had the advantage. They took up most of the road, and Kit was forced to ride along the grassy bank at the side of the track. But her horse was tiring fast, and she could not draw level with the carriage. A curtain was pulled back from the gap in the door. Kit turned to it, desperate to see just who was inside. But a vast hat covered the person's face. A hand reached through the window, bearing a pistol.
No! Kit cried out in panic. She pulled sharply on the reins of her horse as the shot went off. Crows took to the air at the noise, cawing loudly as the shot landed in a fir tree, splintering the bark.
Kit turned her horse and backed up, letting the carriage escape before the person inside could reload and fire again. She glanced back over her shoulder. There had been something familiar about that pistol and the hand that held it.
It could be him, Kit murmured to herself as she turned back toward Uttoxeter.
Whoever was sending messages to Mary Stuart at Chartley Castle, they were making use of other men to send the letters, as well as men they had paid off, such as Mackintosh. The rider worked for another.
It could be him, Kit whispered to herself again as she rode away down the road. It could be Lord Ruskin.
Chapter 2. What does it say? Kit asked as she sat down by the fire. Thomas Philippes didn't answer at first. He was bent over in his stool, his small brown eyes dancing across the page that was lit by the firelight.
Philippes,
she said impatiently, her tone sharp. Walsingham's man looked up at her and blinked.
I didn't notice you were back.
Always a pleasure to see you too, Kit said tartly and leaned toward the fire, keen to warm up after her dip in the river. You're not exactly the most talkative of spies to work with. Any of your other partners ever told you that?
No. I do as I'm told by Walsingham. Everything else is just...
He waved a hand in the air, unable to find the right word, and returned his focus to the paper before him.
Frippery? She offered, and he nodded. It is frippery to chase down the man who sent Mary Stuart a letter, is it?
It was one of the tasks Kit had been given by Walsingham once they had set up the watch on Mary Stuart's communications. Any man seen to be corresponding with her had to be followed, and their identity discovered. Kit thought of the hand she had seen grasping the pistol out of the carriage window. It was just possible that she had known that hand, that it belonged to Lord Ruskin. But it could just as easily have been her imagination. The Scottish lord was on her mind these days, not just because he had tried to kill her on that clifftop, but because back in London he was the topic of most conversations between the members of the Blackwood family. They spoke of the man who had betrayed and murdered their beloved husband and father constantly.
Did you get him? The man who sent this? Philippes asked.
No.
Then to answer your question, yes, it is frippery.
Kit leaned her head on the stone hearth and sighed deeply. Philippes was no great friend to her. They'd frequently argued in the past when they had come across one another, for they were both considered fine code-breakers for Walsingham.
I don't want to argue with you today, Philippes said eventually as he made notes, decoding the letter.
At least an argument would be a conversation. Kit's words were met with a glower from Philippes, who scratched the scruffy beard on his chin. He returned his focus to the letter, disregarding her. She would have infinitely rather worked with her last spy partner, but at the moment she was one of the few who knew he was still alive.
I miss him, she whispered to herself,
so quietly that Philippes did not hear her. Eva was at his house in London with his mother and siblings. They were all hiding there, far away from Scotland, and hopefully they were safe from the clutches of Lord Ruskin. He'd already attempted to see Eva dead once, and with the rest of the family at risk, he had moved them all to the relative safety of the capital. Kit tried to shift Eva from her mind. He had occupied her thoughts a lot as of late, ever since she had helped him escape from Urquhart Castle, where he had been imprisoned for a year. She raised a hand to the neck of her doublet and pulled out the gold necklace he had given her to wear, clutching the pendant, a Celtic shield knot said to protect the wearer. Quickly tucking it away again beneath her shirt, she shifted her focus back to Philippe's and the letter he was decoding.
Any ideas? She asked.
A few. We're lucky that brewer didn't drop this one in the beer like he did the last. Philippe's cursed under his breath, making it clear what he thought of Mackintosh. Shortly after the brewer had been given the letter by the red-cloaked rider, he had driven the cart to their agreed meeting point, where Philippe's had been waiting. It was a small, cobbled house outside Uttoxeter, well hidden from the roads and on the edge of the Chartley Castle estate. Once it had been decoded by Philippe's, it would be sent on to its original recipient at Chartley Castle, Mary Stuart. There. Philippe's drew a line under a fresh piece of paper. Oh. He slumped down as he read the letter in full. Philippe's, what does it say? Standing up from her place at the hearth, Kit reached for the letter. It was signed by an Anthony Babington. Babington? Who is he? Kit asked, her voice quiet.
Derbyshire gentry, Philippe's explained with a wave of his hand. Walsingham calls him a recusant.
Kit read the letter with growing shock. It spelled out a plot to put Mary on the throne of England. It was clear from the letter that Babington was a fierce Catholic. He viewed Queen Elizabeth as a heretic leader, and one that could legitimately be assassinated, as the Pope had excommunicated her. Reading his words sent a shiver down Kit's spine, despite the warmth of the fire in the room.
Myself with 10 gentlemen and 100 of our followers will undertake the delivery of your royal person from the hands of your enemies. For the dispatch of the usurper, from the obedience of whom we are by the excommunication of her made free, there be 6 noble gentlemen, all my private friends, who for the zeal they bear to the Catholic cause and your Majesty's service will undertake that tragical execution.
He speaks as if religious zeal makes murder forgivable, said Kit. Philippe's remained silent. Had he ever been there, his reaction would have been a lot stronger than that of a man who just tapped his fingers on the table, lifted a quill, then replaced it. Philippe's was as mild-mannered as a mouse. Babington presented a plot to Mary that would see her on the throne of England. By assassinating Elizabeth and encouraging a long-term occupation by Spanish and French forces, Babington hoped to build a stronger England with Mary as their leader. "He wishes to make us a puppet state," Kit said sharply. Philippe still had little to add. "Is this not enough?" she asked, holding the letter high. "There is another plot. This is the proof of it. Is it not enough to take this to Walsingham as it is? Babington would be arrested. His co-conspirators' names, I do not doubt, Walsingham would prize from him.
Yet it is not enough proof against Mary Stuart, is it?
Kit thought back to the lady she had met in the winter. Tall, with a formidable presence, Mary Stuart could leave no one in doubt of what she thought of her own position. That same need for reverence was matched by her disregard for others. She had ordered Lord Ruskin to kill Kit, as if she were nothing more than a fly dancing around her marchpane. "Walsingham will need more if he is to accuse her of treason," Kit said. Philippe's folded up the original letter, then replaced the red wax seal he had initially broken by simply melting the wax and letting it drip off. He burnt a fresh red wax stick, ready to seal the letter again. "Wait!" Kit held out a hand to stop him.
"What for?"
When he made no effort to pause his movements, she took his wrist and pulled his hand away from the paper, so the wax dropped on the floor between them. He glared at her.
"What are you doing?"
"We both wish for this to be over, yes? For Walsingham to at last have proof that Mary Stuart is involved in a plot against the Queen." She didn't need to wait for his answer, for he was already nodding. "Then we goad her." She released Philippe's wrist.
"How?"
"She may not reply to this letter." Kit waved the translation in the air. "She could easily let Babington's plot go ahead without her confirmation. Let's add something to it."
"Add what? How?"
"Are you not an expert forger as well as a codebreaker?" Kit asked with a smile. "What if Babington were to ask for Mary's encouragement?"
"Perhaps."
Despite his uncertain words, Philippe's was already opening the original letter again.
Using the code he had deciphered, he added a single line to the letter that requested Mary's approval of the plot, should she wish for her escape.
"I most humbly beseech your approval. My friends and I will then seek to free you from your prison."
"Do you think she will respond?" asked Philippe.
"We have to hope she will." Kit folded the letter and returned it to the table. As Philippe prepared the red wax seal, ready to fix it in place once again, Kit left the room. She walked out of the cottage and into the grounds. Beside a narrow lane stood Mackintosh. His cart of beer barrels was behind him, with jackdaws landing on the edge, clearly curious about his cargo and the strong stench of ale. He waited patiently for the return of the letter, murmuring to the horses beside him.
"How long, ma'am?"
the brewer called to her.
"Until what?" she asked.
"Until she's taken to the tower. Can't be long now."
Mackintosh shook his head, causing his heavy jowls to tremble.
"Not with all these letters passing back and forth."
"We'll see."
Kit folded her arms, waiting for Philippe to be done with the letter. That morning she had received another letter from Walsingham. He was growing impatient at their lack of progress. He wanted answers and longed to see Mary Stuart's arrest warrant.
"Here it is."
Philippe appeared beside Kit. He was much shorter and crept around her to deliver the letter into Mackintosh's hand. Mackintosh returned the letter to the trick cork, then placed it in the barrel. They stepped back and waited for him to ride away. Once he was gone, Kit held up a hand to Philippe's, preventing him from going back inside just yet.
"Walsingham wrote today. He's tired of delays," she said. "He's restless."
"For the Queen's sake, or his own?" Philippe asked, and Kit managed a smile.
"Both, I think."
The last few months had not been easy on Walsingham. Not only did he feel guilt, a debt to the Queen that he had to pay by keeping her safe, but his health was worsening with every day that passed, and it soured his mood further.
"When we do see him, I pray we have good news," Philippe said with a sigh and stepped into the cottage.
"As do I." Kit thought of the news she had withheld from Walsingham. Eva had begged her not to tell the spymaster he was alive and back in London just yet.
The longer the deception went on, the more the guilt weighed on Kit. A few months ago she'd had no qualms about keeping the secret, for she'd felt Walsingham had betrayed her by not telling her where he had sent Eva. Now he was ageing, and his health was deteriorating, and she was concealing important information from the man who considered himself her guardian.
"He must be told soon," she resolved quietly.
Chapter 3
"He's here!"
Kit stepped back from the cottage window and hurried to the door, flinging it open. It had only been a few days, but now Mackintosh had returned. He was sweating profusely in the sweltering heat, wiping his brow as he stopped his cart and jumped down.
"Well?"
she called to him. The brewer nodded and walked around the cart, reaching for one of the barrels on the back.
"Philippe's,"
Kit called to the codebreaker. She strode out of the cottage as Philippe appeared in the doorway and peered out into the bright sunshine. She helped Mackintosh pull a barrel down from the back of the cart and roll it onto its side. They levered out the wooden cork before Mackintosh popped the lid. Inside was a curled-up piece of white paper. Kit took it from the brewer's fingers, noting the red wax seal. She expected it to be blank in an effort to hide the sender, but it seemed Mary Stuart had been so certain that her message was secret, she had allowed the seal to be marked. It bore the symbol of two unicorns facing one another. Kit smiled at the sight of it.
"It's from her,"
she called to Philippe in the doorway, who showed no sign of stepping out into the heat. Kit took the letter to the codebreaker, who snatched it from her fingers and hurried indoors. Despite the bright sunshine, the cottage had so few windows that there was little light inside. Philippe moved to the nearest window and flattened out the paper against the pane.
Kit restlessly tapped the toe of her boot as she watched Philippe's work. He drew a copy of the unicorns in the seal first, so he could replicate it later, then took a candle.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?